Hi, everyone. This is Samantha Jo from Man of Steel, Wonder Woman, and Justice League, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hello, fellow members of Nerd Nation. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Hope you enjoyed that bonus episode of Comic Book Central you got this week, man. Oh, you got the bonus plan this week. It was my conversation with Arrowverse director Jesse Warren. That was fun. You got an extra episode this week. If you haven't heard it, by all means, after today's show, go back and check it out. Now, on today's show, we are going to be spending some time both in the Marvel Universe and in the DC Universe with my special guest, Samantha Jo. Now, Samantha was a stunt woman on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and you can see her on the big screen with acting roles in Man of Steel and the upcoming blockbusters Wonder Woman and Justice League. Man, back to back, that's going to be amazing. So lots to talk about with Samantha today. She's going to be joining us in the lair in just a few minutes. Coming up later in the show, I will announce which one of you listeners out there will receive my featured giveaway from February's Flashback Flash Forward Month, season one of The Flash on Blu-ray, thanks to the fine folks at Warner Brothers. A lot of you out there shared those February pinned posts on Facebook and Twitter. My thanks to all of you out there who did that. One of you is going to be getting that Flash set, season one on Blu-ray, so stay tuned for that. Always love it when you share the lair. This time, I'm going to be sharing that box set with one of you. Speaking of sharing the lair and hashtag share the lair, I want to mention something that's happening in the world of podcasting throughout the month of March on social media. Many of the nation's top podcasting networks, they're trying to get podcast listeners to get the word out about the shows that they love. So if you've got favorite podcasts that you like, they want you to get the word out. To do this, they're asking folks to use the hashtag TryPod. That's TryPod, as in like try a new podcast. So hashtag TryPod. They want you to use that when you're sharing links to the shows on social media. The hope is that using that hashtag this month, that will get people to try podcasts, get them to listen to more shows. Also, what's cool about this is if you include a show-specific hashtag along with TryPod, that might get the podcast a mention on the feed. That's Libsyn's podcast. Libsyn is, of course, the hosting service for Comic Book Central. Now, the reason I mention all of this is that since there are going to be a lot more ears out there listening for these new podcasts or new to them, let's all take the month of March to really get the word out about Comic Book Central. And of course, all of your other favorite podcasts out there as well. That's the whole point of all this. When you share the lair throughout March, so even if it's past episodes, like the Flash episodes from February, when you're sharing those through March, include those hashtags. Hashtag TryPod, TryPod, and hashtag share the lair, SHARETHELAIR. Share the lair and TryPod. That could trigger with Libsyn. They might recognize the show, mention it on their show. So that'd be cool. So it just keeps growing the audience. So those two hashtags. Hopefully that will get the attention of even more comic book loving guys and gals out there and will continue to grow the audience for the show. So retweet the post from Comic Book Central on Twitter. It's at Comic Book CTRL. Share the post from Comic Book Central on Facebook, facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. You know where they're at. Use those hashtags on both. Hashtag TryPod, hashtag share the lair. And links to my social media pages, of course, you can find them on the website, comicbookcentral.net. So feel free to share any of the episodes. I always appreciate it. Mark Hamill would be a very cool one to share. So many of you out there shared that one. Share today's episode, by all means, man. This is going to be a fun one to share this week. Let's take a minute to get a little bit of background on my special guest today, and then I'm going to be right back for an in-depth conversation with the lovely and talented Samantha Jo. Samantha was born in Ontario, Canada, and was trained in martial arts from the age of four. Immersing herself in the sport, she won numerous medals and achieved Olympic-level competition. A move to Los Angeles in her late teens allowed Samantha to combine her two passions, martial arts and performing, when she became a stunt double, quickly racking up credits in such high-profile projects as the comic book-based film Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, Sucker Punch, directed by future Man of Steel director Zack Snyder, and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where she doubled for actress Ming-Na Wen. Now, but Samantha doesn't just have a mean roundhouse kick, she's got some mad acting skills as well. Gamers know her as the live-action embodiment of Kitana from the series Mortal Kombat, which is based on the wildly popular video game. And you can spot her suiting up as the Kryptonian Kar-Vex in 2013's Man of Steel. Now, this summer, she is set to hit the island of Themyscira with Diana Prince and her Amazonian sisters as Eubea in the long-awaited Wonder Woman feature film. And she'll follow that up later this year with an appearance in the mega superhero team-up flick, Justice League. Actress, model, martial artist, athlete, stunt woman. Man, is there anything that my guest today cannot do?
Oh, God.
We're going to find out. This summer, we know she'll be fighting alongside Wonder Woman on the big screen. Time to welcome in Samantha Jo. Samantha, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Huge year for you. Wow. This is going to be fun. You mentioned off mic, this was the big year was you working, I guess, last year.
Yeah. Man. It's funny that this year technically is the big year because last year is, you know, where all the traveling and the training and the fighting happened. Yeah. And so far I've gotten to take a little bit of a break. So this it doesn't feel big yet.
Yeah, this you dress up, you get to walk the red carpets, you get to go to the, I mean, this is going to be the, you know, all the fun stuff that, you know, you're not like throwing down with swords and everything right now. So.
That's just for fun at the moment.
Yeah, man, we're gonna talk all about these things. Boy, look, at an age when some of us are just starting to read comic books and get into all some of these things, you were like thrown down with some martial arts, though, right? At like 4 years old.
Yeah, you know, my mom had a jiu-jitsu background, and both of my brothers did jiu-jitsu growing up. So it's basically as soon as I could walk and, you know, not get too injured in class, they threw me into martial arts. And I just kind of never looked back from there. It was so fun.
Okay. What's home life like for you at that point when like everybody's just running around and is it like a Bruce Lee film at that point? And everybody's like, you know, pass the rolls. You pass the rolls. Wow. You know, like you how know, does that work in a family setting?
I never really thought it was that strange until I had these conversations with other people and realized how different their home lives were.
Yeah, I don't remember getting into martial arts. Like, we would throw punches and wrestle and stuff, but...
Yeah. Oh, I mean, of course we did that. Typical, yeah. Like, brother-sister fighting. Yeah. But what's craziest was the punishments from my mom, because it's not like she would just send us to our room or take away our free time or whatever. She would have us... If we did something naughty, she would have us stand in the corner and balance on one leg until we absolutely couldn't anymore. So like an hour balancing on one leg. And if we put our toe down, she would have this like little twig and just give you gentle little like pokes on the foot and you put it down.
Okay. That's that's some. So it's like an episode of Survivor then if you get out of line with mom.
It was like a mental challenge anytime we did something wrong.
Wow. That's one would assume that maybe you were a well-behaved child then. Is it? Or like, did you get into trouble a lot? Did you have to worry about this often?
Yeah. I think that I was a pretty well-behaved child. Okay. I think that my little brother kind of took all the attention for the naughty stuff. And so I saw those punishments and I learned really quick just to hang back and be cool.
Oh, wow. Okay. So getting you into martial arts at an early age, kind of walk us through that. So you're 4 years old. What are you getting into? And then how does that develop, over your childhood?
Yeah. Well, at 4 years old, I started in jiu-jitsu and I by no means claim to be a world-class jiu-jitsu woman. I that was just something that I started with and it was great. I wasn't really capable of doing a whole lot at four. So mainly it was for the discipline and the exercise. And I guess just kind of kickstarted my habits and my work ethic in my life. So when I was 11 or 12 and I decided, hey, you know what? I still really like martial arts. I want to try something new. That's when I got into wushu, which is Chinese martial arts. And from there, I don't know. Maybe I just have an addictive personality, but then I just jumped on board with that martial art and I took it as far as I could go. It was my entire life. I like didn't go to birthday parties because I was too busy training. I didn't go for holidays because I was too busy training. It just became my life and I loved it. And that really is a second family for me. So, and for those of you who don't know what wushu is, it's not mushu pork. I do get that a lot.
It has nothing to do with being a chef at all, right? This is
nothing at all to do with
this. This is the Jet Li thing, right? When we see Jet Li.
Exactly. And that's the example I love to give because, you know, he's such a recognizable face in the sport. And he was on the Beijing wushu team, but he's like a hero in the wushu sport. So he's definitely the one to look at if you don't know what it is.
Okay. So you got into competition and you really excelled at this. So there's two things I want to ask you about around this time. I mean, there's modeling, right? Is modeling coming in around the same time? Okay.
It was definitely child modeling and it was more like print work. It was, you know, for Sears or the Bay or the May Company, I would be, you know, a little kid on those where it's just like a bunch of multicultural looking faces wearing different clothing, smiling with the fake families.
Okay. Yeah, like the stock photos or something like that.
Exactly. It was that. It was not like modeling.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I saw this like Model and Talent Search Canada in 2002. So child of the year. Okay. So, but you more gravitated toward the martial arts and then competitive martial arts then, right?
Definitely.
Okay. Yes. What were you involved with on a competition level? And then tell our listeners like really how far you went with this.
Well, on a competition level, I guess the first one was, you know, making the national team. So we train with different national athletes. And then I managed to secure a spot on the Canadian national team. I am Canadian. And then from there, we just had competitions all over the world, Pan American Games, World Championships. But there was one standout year in 2008 for the Beijing Olympics. It got to be the exhibition sport because it's China's national sport. That was like the one and only year that wushu got to be a part of the Olympics as the exhibition sport. So it was literally a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I managed to qualify at the World Championships because I won a bronze medal. So that qualified me for the Olympic tournament. And, you know, it was just an amazing experience. Just I got to march out, you know, for opening, closing ceremonies and just the whole experience living at Olympic Village, being around these amazing athletes all the time. It was just a surreal experience. And I think it really taught me that all the hard work paid off because there's always, you know, a small part of you that feels a little sad missing out on the kind of fun aspects of high school and, you know, childhood life and birthday parties. But, oh, man, was it worth it? It was just, I mean, and it gave me everything I have today. That's how the whole stunt work got started. And that's how I think I really got my foot in the door with the film industry.
Well, what were you doing on a competition level, though? Was it individual against individual, or was it were you doing moves? How did that play out? Like, how did you excel at that? And what were they looking at? What were they judging?
Okay, well, when I meet other martial arts, this is the first thing that I will tell them. It was not a combat martial art on my part. So I was...
This wasn't doing... Mortal Kombat, right?
No, it wasn't.
This was
Mortal
not preparing
Kombat.
You for Mortal Kombat.
No, so when I meet other kickboxers and TIE fighters, I do not try to compare myself to them because I know mine was an individual sport. So it's one person, whether that's me or another competitor, on the carpet by yourself, and you're doing a form, a kata.
It's almost like a gymnastics thing then, right? So if people watch gymnastics in the Olympics, it's more on that level of just doing something individually?
Exactly. Okay. And you have a point system where certain difficult moves will get give you more points. Got it. Then you have, you know, your technicalities and your...
Yeah, I'm just wondering if you're like in this competition, you're like throwing down with people and it's just like, go easy on them. No,
I know.
So
they like to have that thought of me in their head. And I need to nip that in the bud immediately, because if somebody tried to challenge me, I can't guarantee that I would look as cool as I do fighting someone than I do when I'm fighting the air.
Well, that's what the actors always say that too. It's like, you know, in the movies, I can beat anybody up, but like, movies. That's fake stuff. So, okay. But you did excel. So we know, you know what you're doing, especially when we watch your work, man. The moves are just unbelievable. Okay, so what were your influences at that point? We know competitively you're in that family, you're in that world. But then how are you transitioning into Hollywood? Are you watching movies? Are there movies that inspired you? Are there TV shows or actors or actresses that inspired you to kind of move gravitate toward that area?
Well, certainly. And I mean, we were talking about Jet Li earlier, and he was by far the first big influence for me. Whenever I watched his films, I just loved how fast he can move. I mean, his hands and feet just move at the speed of light. And the fact that he could bring that into film work, and he, I know he was doing it himself, and it was just so fascinating to me. That was, like, I think the first goal in the film industry that I had, especially being a woman. I knew that, I mean, there's Cynthia Rothrock, there are a number of female influences, but I didn't feel like any of them reached the point of Jackie Chan or Jet Li quite yet. And so I really wanted to see that happen, whether it was with me or somebody else. I just knew that I wanted to be a part of that movement, to really be able to let women shine in action films and shine physically as well. So that kind of – that was my first influence, Jet Li, Jackie Chan, Chuck Norris. Yeah, this sounds
– okay, did you watch Chuck Norris films?
I did. I didn't resonate with them as much.
What's your favorite Chuck Norris film?
I mean,
do you have one, or you just like his style?
I was always a huge fan of Walking Texas Ranger when it came to Chuck Norris.
I know. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. Well, my mom loved it, so I just kind of grew up watching it with her. And you know, I think at that age, anything to do with martial arts was fascinating to me. Yeah. But, you know, it certainly was an entertaining show.
Yeah. Any Bruce Lee movies or anything?
Bruce Lee, I mean, there's always Enter the Dragon. There's all the typical ones, you know.
The ones you want. Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's just so fun to watch. Now when I'm watching Wonder Woman, I'll be like, I think there's a little Chuck Norris in there. I think there's a little Chuck Norris influence. No, I just will know that.
Yeah, I love him. Now it might be a little outdated if I'm pulling off Chuck Norris moves.
I just love knowing that DNA is in there somewhere. That's cool for us.
That's like the other kind of nerd. That's the martial arts nerd side.
Yes. No, okay, so how do you get – so you're in Canada. You're doing all this competition. You love these movies. How do you then get to L.A. and get into the film industry? Because I think you – I mean, obviously we're going to talk about the stunt work – early on, that's what got you in. And I think, was it Scott Pilgrim versus the World? Was that very early on?
Oh, it was very early. Okay. Well, from the martial arts, thankfully, I mean, it's funny because I always knew I wanted to be a part of film. And I no one ever really knows how it's going to happen because it happens differently for everyone. But I just made this little reel of me flipping around and like doing kicks and just like goofing around in the gym. And I didn't think anyone would see it. It was primarily for my friends, my other friends that I trained with, to watch. And I guess some stunt coordinators out in Los Angeles had been looking for people to stunt double. And so they came across the video, and that's how I got my first – it's funny. It wasn't even a phone call. It was a Facebook message because they watched my YouTube video.
So you post something on YouTube, and you're getting calls from Hollywood producers.
Yeah, or a Facebook message.
The whole new world of social media. Wow.
I know. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And then I think from there, that's my name, I guess, started circulating. I didn't really know too much about it. But I started working. Scott Pilgrim versus the World was the first film job that I'd done. And then King of Fighters, I doubled Maggie Q and a couple other actresses. And the ball just kept rolling from there, really. And then Sucker Punch was the first, I guess, like full run of a show where I had the pleasure of stunt doubling. And it was, for me, even up to this date, that was the most fun I'd ever had on a movie. It was just, you know, the people, the experience, Vancouver is beautiful. So really from Wushu, it was YouTube and Facebook that really made the connections for me.
Well, Sucker Punch is the one I wanted to ask you about, because is that the Zack Snyder connection then? Is that sort of opening some comic booky superhero doors later down the road?
Yeah, I guess so. And
did he, did you work with him? Like, I mean, you know, obviously you're just starting out, so it's not like, you know, you're going to be like, hey, Zach. but was there any like connection on that level, or did he remember you and bring you back later? How did that sort of play out?
You know, I never really know about the conversations that happen when I'm not there, but Damon Caro was the first, he was the stunt coordinator on Sucker Punch, And he gave me my first big opportunity to stunt double on that film. And he's good friends with Zack Snyder. So what I think may have happened is maybe I just, you know, I went in, I tried to do the best I could do. Physically, I happened to be the right height and have the right skill set. And then once Man of Steel came along, you know, hopefully I just did a good enough job to where they both agreed that I could work again. And then from
okay,
there,
so that team then was still together on Man of Steel then, and then so the, even the stunt coordinators remembered you from that.
Yeah, it's pretty much been the same team all the way through, because Damon Caro was then second unit director on Man of Steel, and then on Wonder Woman and Justice League. So it's been pretty, and then 300 Rise and Empire.
Wow. So, all from a YouTube video. That's awesome. That is amazing. Yeah. Well, I want to talk about some of these things. I think some of them overlap, and you can kind of walk us through chronologically on some of these things. But, you know, obviously coming in on the stunt side, Mortal Kombat Legacy. So we're looking around like 2011, you coming in as Katana. So this is bringing the video game to life in this project. Okay. And this is directed by Kevin Tancharoen.
Yes, that's
okay.
Right.
So I'm guessing this is like opening the door to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on some level too.
Is it? I don't know. I think it was pretty separate of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, I know he directed you in one of your greatest fight scenes in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's what I was curious about.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely he did. It definitely felt more coincidental. Like, nobody really knew who was all going to be there, and then it was this big reunion.
Oh, okay, because I know his sister is one of the writers and executive showrunners and writer and executive.
That's right.
Yeah,
well,
okay, so I didn't know if like these are like all doors of people that you're knowing coming open. So was Mortal Kombat the first sort of platform into acting?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I did little toy commercials and stuff when I was a kid, but definitely that was the first part where I there'd be some sort of exposure, and I felt like I could really, you know, have fun with it primarily.
Yeah. So here's a role, here's a character, here's an iconic character from these video games, and you're able to bring her to life at that point. How did you get into the acting side of it then? Because you're coming, I mean, and I'm curious too, like when you're acting, are you doing the stunts as well? Will they allow you to do the stunts as well when you're acting?
Yeah, I mean, I've had the luck that I have been able to do that. I did have a stunt double for the very first time ever on Justice League, which was really weird for me. but before that, yeah, for all of Mortal Kombat, I did do all of my own things, all of my own stunt work and fights. I'm not really scared of cuts and bruises, and I did it as a living for so long. So, I mean, if I can help the production in that way, then, you know, unless I'm really going to get injured, I'm completely down for it. I love it. I was a little bit of a tough kid and, you know, a little tomboyish. So,
okay. So were you a gamer? Like, were you familiar with the game? Cause I'm not as familiar with the gaming side of it. Like I like the movies and the TV versions and things, but I'm not as familiar with the gaming side. Were you a gamer by any means? Were you familiar with Mortal Kombat, the game?
Oh, definitely familiar with Mortal Kombat, and that was one of the only video games that I did play growing up. Calling myself a gamer might be a little bit of a stretch. Because
what
I,
is that? Is that like somebody who's like really, really good at it?
You know, in my mind, that's what it is. So, like, I want to pay respect to those people by not calling myself that, because I'm more of like a controller smasher. Like, my thumbs just go crazy when I'm stressed, and I just...
That's what I'm... Like, okay, now I can relate.
Yeah, okay. So that's what I enjoy it, but there's definitely no skill involved on my end, so I don't know if I could call myself a gamer.
Okay.
But I loved all of that, and I don't know if I liked the fighting aspect or the, you know, competitive aspect, because I'd be playing my brothers, which, you know, of course you want to beat your brothers.
Yeah.
But
what did they think when you're like, oh, you're in the video game project?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're brothers, so they're kind of like, well, that's cool.
Oh, that's all you're going to get out of. They remember you beating them up as a kid, right?
Well, I don't know. They did do jiu-jitsu too, and I am the baby of the group, so
okay.
I think I suffered my share of hits from them.
Okay. Now, I'm thinking Man of Steel and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. again are kind of like overlapping.
Yeah, I think we shot Man of Steel 2000... 11. You know, my memory is really horrible when it comes to this. I think it was sometime in 2011, though.
Okay.
Yeah, and I came in about halfway through season two or season one, maybe season one of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
How were you brought into S.H.I.E.L.D. then? Because on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's stunts only, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, and you're Ming-Na Wen's stunt woman? And also, yep. Did you stunt for Chloe Bennett?
I did. I think it was on two episodes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I was just called by a friend of mine to double. Oh, that's right. Yeah, she was the stunt double for Ming-Na Wen. Her name is also Ming.
Okay.
And we'd worked together on Sucker Punch. She was a stunt double. And on King of Fighters, she was the main Maggie Q stunt double. So you know, sometimes if one of us isn't free and we're the same height, it's easy to kind of share jobs between everyone. So I think she was just preoccupied and she wanted to know if I wanted to go in and double, and I said sure, and then the rest is history. And I love Ming-Na Wen, and we got along great, and I shared a lot of great experiences on that show with her, specifically the May versus May fight.
Well, I definitely want to talk about that. I want to break down that scene too, because that is to me one of the greatest action sequences ever on TV. I mean, that is just unbelievable. So you're now you're for people who don't know, your husband is also a stuntman, correct?
That's right.
He's also, what do you do? Stunt woman, stunt man, stunt person? How do you guys, because I asked Heidi Moneymaker this and she's like, whatever. This works good.
I think I'm on the same opinion as Heidi.
Okay.
It's just kind of whatever. Yeah.
Okay. So now your husband does a lot of work also in DC and Marvel Universe. He's like, he does stunts in Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain America, I think Winter Soldier and things like that too. So were you familiar with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Coming into this, like, had you seen the show? Did you know what the characters were? Did you know what the plots were?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it had actually aired yet when I started working. I think,
okay.
I mean, we were still filming, but maybe just the pilot had aired by then.
Got it.
But I was certainly familiar with it because, I mean, there aren't that many action TV shows that film in Los Angeles. So just among our own group of friends, somebody is constantly going in for that show. It's, you know, it employs a lot of people. So everyone knew that it was around. And obviously, being a part of the Marvel Universe, it's always exciting. And we know there's going to be comic influences. That's always fun. It means, you know, big, fancy fight sequences.
Do you read comics at all? I mean, does your husband read comics at all? Or did you as kids?
My husband definitely enjoys them more. But the only ones that I read were specifically for Wonder Woman and Justice League. But I mean, I don't know. I'm a fan of them, but I guess I just never got around to I was just so busy training. It's like my whole childhood.
Yeah, I kind of figured, yeah.
I was being in the gym. But I'm a fan of them. I love the graphics, the illustrations. I love the simple storytelling. It's simple because there aren't many words, but I don't know how it's so exciting.
Yeah.
Just of the few that I did read for Wonder Woman and Justice League, I think I'm going to have to make more of a habit to do it.
That's what because you're kind of immersed in this comic book world now, especially with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. There's so much work you're doing. What when we're talking about Ming-Na Wen, she is just unbelievable on the show. What will they let her do? What won't they let her do?
I guess it's just about, well, anything that's, you know, extremely acrobatic or that might end up hurting, you know, getting bruises. I mean, not to say that she doesn't get bruises, just what she does. But, you know, anything where there's going to be falling or just acrobatics that, you know, requires a certain background in gymnastics or acrobatics, then she can't do that stuff. But Ming is so down to do anything that she is capable of. I mean, she'll do all of the fight stuff. Whether or not they use it from her angle or they just had to go wide when it was stunt doubles, she is so down to do everything. And a very good portion of all those fights is her. And she works hard for it, too, because when we were filming for those fight scenes, I'd actually go to her house and we'd train and practice them, you know, ahead of getting to set. So she was – it was amazing. She was just so committed to doing
– Okay, back up one second. When you say go to her house, is there like – is there like this huge danger room, X-Men kind of style thing?
Oh.
Or is there like you just like smashing her coffee table and things?
Oh my God. I mean, there probably were a few knocks at the coffee tables. But
are you like practicing in the living room?
Yeah, well, like
oh,
the big,
man, she must have a big living room.
Foyer area. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't want to say too much about her house, but she definitely has the space for it. So, I mean, we trained indoors or we trained outside, depending on the weather.
Okay.
And it was always just a good time. Get out the yoga mats and stretch and warm up.
Yeah, your fight scenes are dealing with more than yoga mats.
Yeah.
Okay, so what surprises you most about her?
Well, firstly, when I found out her age, I thought she was lying to me. So that was a pretty big shock. I mean, she has the spirit of a 20-year-old, and she doesn't look a lick past 35 to me. So I just thought that was amazing. But I think the most surprising thing was her willingness to do all of the fighting stuff. Because I can only imagine myself when I get to be that age. I probably am going to be a little, like, tired and I don't know, those things are just going to be a lot harder, but you would never be able to tell looking at her because she works out and she's committed and she's like falling on the ground and like throwing high kicks. And that was the most surprising to me, and her attitude while doing it too. Like, it's no bothersome. It's fun.
I was amazed at the same thing. She looks like a kid out there when she's doing, I mean, it's so amazing just to watch her.
Yeah. Her laugh is just contagious when she's fighting, and she has this big belly laugh, and everyone can hear it. It's great.
Oh, okay, so she doesn't necessarily have to method act then, right?
No.
She'll break character when needed.
No,
okay,
not at all.
Let's talk about the season 2 episode, episode 4, Face My Enemy. It's her character is Melinda May, and she's fighting Melinda May, Agent 33, for those who haven't seen it. Well, how would you describe it?
I guess there is a Agent 33 who is going undercover by wearing a mask so that she looks like Agent May.
Yeah.
So it's confusing everyone. Eventually she has to take out Agent 33, but when she's taking her out, it looks like she's fighting herself.
So. Yeah, it's really cool. And I think Ming-Na Wen even said, he was like, I finally got to do an Evil Twin episode, which is but it's like taking it to the next level. Explain to our listeners how this works. Because typically on S.H.I.E.L.D., you're doing her stunts. Mm-hmm. So there's a fight scene, she can do, and then you're coming in. But in this scene, you have to fight her. So are there two stunt women and Ming-Na Wen? Are you going up against her? Because I know some parts you're going up against her directly, correct?
Yes, that's right.
So, work us through that scene, how it all came about.
So for the majority of the fight, when one wasn't flipping and falling at the same time, for the actual fighting parts of it, it was Ming-Na and myself, and I had these green dots on my face so that they could do the face replacement. And we would do the choreography, and then we would go into this little elevator on set and then switch clothes or switch outfits, not wearing the same clothes, but switch outfits so that we were now opposite, and then go back out and then do the same choreography, but now we're the different people so that they could capture, you know, her real face wearing both of the outfits. But then for the parts where, say, in one part of the fight, I drop kicked, or one of the Mays drop kicked the other May.
Yeah.
And she went flying through this little kind of opening.
Yeah.
So neither of those would really be appropriate for Ming to do
unbelievable. So when we're watching this, one jumps completely up in the air and does a double, both feet drop kick into the chest of the other one, and the other one goes flying back. Which one are you?
I'm the one doing the drop kick.
You're jumping up in the air.
Yeah, I was the one jumping in the air. It feels pretty dang cool. But, you know, they cut away right after the kick. And, you know, once you jump up in the air and you lay out flat and kick like that, you have to come back down to the ground afterwards. So
yes.
It's like kick, and then you fall and you land on your butt. But it's not a big deal. It was really fun for both of us. There was another stunt woman there for that one.
Who was the other stunt woman that was going through?
And her name was Tara.
Okay. All right. So that is an amazing scene. Yeah, because you watch this thing and you go through. And one thing we have to add, too, is that, I mean, typically Ming-Na Wen's character, Melinda, she's got her full S.H.I.E.L.D. outfit on, leather. So, you know, it's easy, I'm guessing, to hide, like, the elbow pads and not so much in the scene, right?
Exactly. Not so much in the scene. In the scene, one of the wardrobes was this silvery sequin dress, and then the other one was basically lingerie.
Yeah, cocktail dress and lingerie. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no hiding anything in those. I don't think we wore any pads for that fight. But it was on carpet, so that was pretty nice.
Okay. And then there's another moment in there where there's like a, you jump on the table and then do a spin in the air at the same time.
Yeah.
And then throw the other character into the, okay, so walk us through that. Cause, man, it's just, I've gone over this like frame by frame too, and it's unbelievable. It's, which one are you, what are you doing? And I don't think Ming-Na Wen was in any of that, right?
No, not in that one.
Okay.
Yeah, so I am the one jumping off of the coffee table and then slamming the other May's head into the table.
Of course you are.
Yeah, and that move, I'd never even done that before, but the fight coordinator, Matt Mullins, came up with that move, and we were practicing. And, you know, of course, when we're practicing, we're going off of mats, and I have all this running space and easy peasy. This is the perfect environment. And then you get to set, and the couch is right behind me. So I don't have any room to run, and I basically have one step onto the table. So it was kind of one of those moments where everyone's ready and everyone's watching and the cameras are rolling, and you're just kind of hoping that you can pull it off. So thankfully, we just did it like six times in a row. And then one of those six times they liked and great, moving on. And I just about passed out from relief.
I would imagine. Well, I mean, what was the coffee table bolted down or was it maneuverable?
Yes, the coffee table was. Well, oh, was it?
Actually, when I'm watching it, you hit the edge of it with your right foot and it starts to tilt.
And, oh, it does. Okay, maybe it wasn't then.
And I thought, I wasn't 100% sure. I'm like, did they not bolt this thing? Because you could have like, well, I don't know. I mean, you were there, but it just seemed to me like, wow, this was close.
Oh, I never even thought about that, really. If it did tilt, it must have been a really heavy coffee table. Because I did practice, and okay. I think I would have said something if it concerned me.
Okay.
So. That is really really great about making sure everybody feels safe and comfortable. And their stunt coordinator, Tanner Gill, is always checking in to make sure, you know, everything feels good. Yeah. Everything has pads or is bolted down where it needs to be. So,
and they could have faked that in post too. I mean, that, you know, they could have made it to look like, you know, it was a little more dangerous than it was too. Cause it was like, whoa, that, you know, anyway. So
they could do anything.
What was your most challenging stunt to date? What's the one that made you think, maybe think twice?
Most challenging. I mean, there are ones that are challenging in the sense where like the skill is very difficult, so you're hoping you can do it. But it's the most, the one that kind of made my eyes go wide was the very first one I did on a film. I guess the first big gag I did on a film. It was on King of Fighters, which was a film directed by Gordon Chan, and it was adapted from another video game. And I was only 17. There was a tutor on set for me because I was still technically a child. And
okay.
It was a little embarrassing being a stunt woman and having the tutor there for you. And my dad was there because I needed a parent guardian. So I didn't know what I was doing that day. And I show up and I'm told that I'm holding this mirror. I'm trying to deflect this energy. And there's a little like explosion that goes off and it sends me back on a wire. And then I hit this car, and then I chip off of this car that's like maybe 30 feet away. And then I land on the ground in this puddle and roll away from it.
Oh, wow.
So, And when he explained it to me, I think just because I'd never done any of those things before, I'd never seen an explosion even on set before. I'd never been in a wire before, let alone, you know, have a ratchet being yanked backwards. I'd never hit a car before. So all of those things put together just sounded so terrifying. But of course, when they said it, I just went, oh yeah, no problem.
Always say yes.
Yeah. But I mean, I knew those guys and I trusted them, and still they're very good friends, my husband's and mine. So okay. I knew that if they were having me do it, everything was going to be A-okay. So okay. I listened and it all went well. And I think we only did it once or twice and that was that. But it was definitely after that day, which was one of my earlier days, I knew that, okay, if I can do this, I think I can handle whatever else comes with this job. So this sounds like a good path for me.
That was a good foundation to have. All right, moving from the Marvel universe to the DC universe, Man of Steel. You did stunt work and also on-screen acting in this one, correct?
Yes.
Which were you brought in for? Like, how did you come into the film? Was it as both, or did that sort of develop when you were brought in?
It developed as I was brought in. So I was brought in to stunt double Feyora. And actually, it's funny because originally there was talk about Feyora being bald.
So when I really?
Did, so, yeah, so when I did get the call for it, it was, hey, Sam, the only thing is, are you okay if we shave your head bald?
They asked you that off the top.
Yeah, right off the top. And you know, I was. It was okay. Just going to be so much fun. And yeah, I feel like we should all shave our heads bald once in our lives. So I was okay with it. Didn't end up happening.
So you're coming into double, is it Anjia Trow?
Yes,
okay. Anjia Trow. This is the Kryptonian villain. So the main female Kryptonian villain, sort of, what is it, Zod's right-hand woman?
Yep.
In the film. So you're coming in to do stunt double for her. And then added on as another Kryptonian villain on screen, right?
Yeah, and I don't know when the decision happened, or maybe they did take that into consideration. But I went in for my wardrobe fittings to try on all the Feyora costumes, and then they had all these other costumes for me. And they're like, oh, so this is for Carvax, blah blah blah. I was like, oh, I don't think I'm doubling Carvax. Like, no, this one's for you. I'm like, I don't think so. And they're like, no, it is. I'm like, oh, okay. So that was really how I found out for that.
Okay, so at that point you're thinking, oh, they're moving me from stunts for the main villain to stunts for not the main villain. And then you realize, oh, no, this is an on-camera role. When you first realized, oh, they're asking me to do an on-camera role, what did you think?
I was so excited. But, you know, being a stunt woman still and working with all these other people who had worked on dozens and dozens of big blockbuster films, like, you know, the wardrobe, and it, basically everyone else around me had all of this experience under their belt. So you feel a little silly getting so excited for Carvax, who it was non-speaking and it was primarily like an action role still. But still, I was really stoked and excited. So it was bubbling up on the inside. I was just really excited and glad to be, a bigger part of the universe, and glad to have been given the opportunity, really.
Well, you get to throw down with Lois Lane.
Exactly. And then on set.
Not many people can say they've done that on screen.
I know. Yeah. And then on the day it was with Russell Crowe and Amy Adams.
Like, I'm looking at the scene. Yeah.
Like, that's just amazing.
There you go. What more? That's what I was going to ask you. Like, you get, how often do you get to work? Okay. So sort of take us into that. You're doing, is this, had you already done all your stunt work by then, or is this all kind of overlapping day to day?
It's all overlapping.
Okay, yeah. So you're going in to do the acting role as Carvax. I was not familiar with, I didn't realize this was a comic book character, though, from Adventure Comics. So
yeah.
Made an appearance in the comic books. So you're going in, describe your shooting, like, how much of your costume, your Kryptonian costume, is CGI? How much did they actually get to put on you? How much did you get to wear?
100% of mine I was wearing. Okay. So I didn't have anything, except for the helmet. Sorry. The helmet piece, we just had this kind of neck piece, but all of that cool liquidy, not quite glass, but this like see-through film that we had as these helmets, that was put in later.
And did you actually get to throw Amy Adams around?
I'm pretty sure I did, but not hard, not. There was a stunt woman also, and that one, they really wanted me to give her a good shove. But we did it with Amy, and she walked in, and I think it was more of like a shove just so that you're past frame and nobody needs to fall or do anything. But okay. I mean, I wouldn't doubt that she would be down. She was just such a bubbly, happy person. It was really just a pleasure to be around.
What was it like to work with all those folks? Because you're coming in, Zack Snyder's directing, you got Henry Cavill. Did you get to work with Henry Cavill at all?
Yep.
Okay, so what was your experience like? Tell us about acting and stunts, and then which do you, if you prefer one or the other?
Well, my experience, first off, on the stunt side, it's great because you're really involved with the production when it comes to them designing the fights. You're there. Physically moving around, walking it out with everyone. So you're really a part of the process. So that part was extremely fun because Henry would come in and train every day and going through fights, practicing wire gags with him, with any of the actors, Michael Shannon, Russell Crowe, anybody that had any action would come into the stunt gym. So you get to spend time, train with everyone. It's just more of an inclusive position, I guess. But I enjoy the acting part more of it. And I think I've always been like that since I was very young. I don't know. I think people are very fascinating, and I just want to learn as much as I can about different people and why they make the decisions that they do. And I guess it's just something I want to explore more. And I feel like acting gives me a better platform to explore that. So I prefer the acting, but as a stunt person, it was very inclusive and part of the process, and you just get to meet so many amazing people. So it's a very difficult path to say now that, you know, I'm in this for the acting, and that's what I want to study and what I want to do and what I want to dedicate all of my time to, because I know there's, you know, it's a pretty, pretty big dream. But I mean, I feel pretty fortunate for the opportunities I've had, and yeah, I just want to keep going.
What was Crow like on set?
He's very into rugby, and he has his own band. These are all things that I learned. So it was nice because he'd come in and he'd warm up by throwing around the rugby with all the guys, the rugby ball with all the guys. I don't know what it's called. I'm sorry.
I don't either.
I'm not a rugby fan. he's just great to have around. I think I was just so in awe of all of the work that he's done before. I mean, I'm just in awe of him as an actor. So, I just thought it was lovely to be in his presence and just be able to study him and how he works on set. And but I didn't interact with him as much as, say, Henry or Ancha.
What were they like? What was Henry like to work with as Superman? He's carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders in this film. It's just, he's in just about every scene.
Oh, yeah. But you would never know it from the way he carries himself. I was really impressed, I think, with his willingness just to kind of help out. Like, I've seen him help these grips unload their truck with equipment just because he was there and because he didn't have anything else at that moment that he needed to do. He just started helping. And I'm like, that's really cool. Like, you're Superman. You're the number one just unloading this truck of equipment.
Hopefully he's in the union, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was just awesome. And I think he liked to hang out in the stunt hall in Man of Steel. And so he was just very much a person. And we got to spend time just getting to know everyone as a person. And then his film Immortals was coming out while we were filming. So he even organized this screening with him and the director. And they rented out one of the theater screens at the Vancouver Scotiabank Theater. And he had a screening just for the stunt team. So there was just 13 of us with Henry and the director, and we got to watch Immortals, and that was really cool.
Wonder Woman. Mm. Oh, I can't believe we're finally getting to see this film. We've been waiting forever to see Wonder Woman on the big screen. I mean, we got to see a little bit of her in the last movie, but in her own film, this is unbelievable. All right. You're going to – big on comic book anniversaries here on Comic Book Central. 30th anniversary for your character, so that's kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
She first appeared 30 years ago. I'm going to need a little bit of Amazon 101 here, because look, I'm a Batman guy, I'm a Superman guy, I'm a Spider-Man guy. My knowledge of Wonder Woman is pretty limited to Linda Carter. So your character, is it Yubia?
Yes, Yubia.
What do we need to know about your character? What did you know about her? How were you brought into the production? Give us the whole rundown.
Okay, well, Yubia is an Amazon warrior, and she has the traits basically that all of the other Amazonians have. You know, they're very strong, they're immortal, they have increased intelligence. So it's, I guess, you know, in every other aspect of Amazonians, she's the same as those guys, a friend of Diana's. And I was brought into the universe. I was called to go in for an audition for a character. I didn't know what character. I kind of figured it was an Amazonian, and I kind of figured it was Wonder Woman because I'd known what these people were working on. But none of the information was openly given out.
Okay.
And so I went in and I auditioned for Christy Carlson, the casting director, and had a lovely time. And then it was a good few months of waiting and not really know what was happening. But then once I did get confirmation, I knew that physically all the Amazonians, you know, they're strong women. And that's how I like it. I want women to be portrayed as strong, especially in the Wonder Woman film. You know, one of the few worlds where the women, you can see their muscles and they're leaping through the air and they can fight for themselves. And that just makes me so proud. I wanted to do it justice. So I started training. I started, you know, drinking protein shakes and trying to lean out my abs.
Okay. So did you amp up your training then because you train constantly for these stunts that you have to do, but did you kind of like take it next level because it was Wonder Woman?
Oh, definitely. Well, because, you know, all the other times I was a stunt double primarily. So the skill set was what I knew I needed to have. So that was always my priority, making sure I could actually do what was needed. Now, when I'm representing an Amazonian, I'm Yubia, I need to physically represent that too, because I'm not doubling anymore. So I really wanted to be sure that I did absolutely everything in my power to do the film justice and the vision of these characters that Patty had. So I started going to this CrossFit gym and I was training, drinking protein shakes, and I was communicating with Mark Twight, the trainer, the physical trainer, and he was giving me diet tips. And then once I got to the UK and we had a full on schedule with Mark, everything was really very detailed and difficult, but certainly worth it. And it just presented so many, I guess, mental, physical challenges. You're just constantly overcoming. And it's funny because you almost feel like you walk out of those sessions a stronger, more mentally healthy person.
You mentioned director Patty Jenkins on this. What does she bring to the process? Because I know so many of these comic book projects are directed by guys. And I think it's so awesome to see a female perspective coming in as a director. What does she bring to this process that you've noticed now that you're sort of immersed in several of these DC movies now?
Well, I think she brings perspective. Like you said, many of these comic book films are directed by men, and that's great. A lot of the comic book characters are men, so it only makes sense. But this is one of the few well-known comic book characters that is a woman. And it's really nice to have a woman's perspective on the character and on all of the supporting cast and on the story, because it's really, you know, something like this, you would expect it to be more of Wonder Woman's perspective. And that is a female perspective. So when the director can better reflect that, I think the audience should really be in for a treat. And I think all the little girls that are going to be in the theater seats watching, and, you know, we've all been waiting. I consider myself one of the little girls. We've all been waiting for something like this for so long that it'll just be all that more satisfying when we can see those feminine touches. And, yeah, I just think perspective and respect for the female characters.
I know you can't get into specifics of the movie. We're looking forward to it. We don't want any spoilers. We want to be, you know, we want to be pleasantly surprised. But what can you describe the movie in broad strokes? What can you tell us about the film, your experience with the film, working with Gal Gadot?
Yeah, plot-wise, I'm going to ask you guys to just do your own research online because I don't want to accidentally say anything.
It's in World War One. We know that. We got that part.
World War One.
It's 100 years before Batman v Superman.
Yes, and I'm primarily on Themyscira, being an Amazonian. What was the original question?
Those are probably the broad strokes that you could describe it in, I'm guessing. Can you where did you shoot? Can you tell us about, because we see, you know, obviously from the trailer and things, we see these like epic battles and horses and swords. Can you tell us about where you shot and maybe some of the details of just the enormity of the shoot?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, the locations that we shot, I feel so incredibly lucky. So we did most of our training in the UK, and that was where the studio was. We were at the old Harry Potter studio, Leavesden, in the UK. And when we went to do all of the beach sequences and a lot of these beautiful landscapes that you may see in the trailer, we were in Italy. So we got to travel around a few different cities in Italy, my favorite being Matera, but we did a lot of it in Marina di Camerota, and that was where these beautiful crystal blue beaches with this sand, this white sand, we all lived in these little villages, kind of like camping villages, and they were like little huts or cabins, I suppose. And everybody had their own, and we would just walk down to the beach to work. And I thought that was just so incredibly neat, that there's like this swimming pool and this dining hall, and then we just walk down to the beach in our flip-flops or whatever we have on, and we're at work. And it was neat because when you sit in the sand and you're just looking at the set, you're looking at the ocean, and it's like you're on vacation. You just feel like you're on vacation, but really you're at work.
With hundreds of Amazonian warriors around you.
Yeah, just glowing with their wardrobe, reflecting the sun's light. It was really surreal.
What did you think when you first put the costume on?
I thought, man, this is going to chafe. No, I'm just kidding. No. I think, well,
you need a lot of talc.
Yeah, I've definitely had the pleasure of wearing really cool wardrobe before. So I might not have had the extreme reaction that I might have had the very first time. But, you know, anytime I'm wearing armor and these like leather straps, I just know that something is about to go down. And I'm just so happy to be a part of it. I think when you wear armor and when you have these heavy kick-ass boots, it just makes the way that you carry yourself a little bit different. It changes the way that you carry yourself and the way that you see yourself. It changes your posture, the way that you feel. So it just adds something. And I was really happy that we weren't in, say, like performance capture suits or something. Mm-hmm. Nothing against performance capture, but, you know, like I said, it just kind of changes the way you carry yourself. And so I think we're incredibly lucky to have that experience and to look in the mirror when we're wearing these gorgeous outfits and be like, yeah, I'm a warrior.
Had you seen Batman v Superman leading up to this?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Oh, yeah. What did you think of Gal's performance there? How do you think she does as Wonder Woman? Do you know her, you know, outside of just working with her?
Never met her outside of working with her. Okay. But obviously in Batman versus Superman, I think most people can agree that she did an amazing job, and I think people were very captivated by her. The mystery, I think, behind her, everybody knows who she is in the film, but you only get little tastes of it. So I think that's what I liked the most about it. Everybody knows that she's Wonder Woman, but you don't really get to see the full scope of everything she can do. It's just that little taste in the final fight scene where you get to see her move, but it's not enough. And I think that's what I liked about it, is that she did such a great job that even though we saw her in this wardrobe, we saw her, you know, in her heels and dresses, we saw her fighting, we still want more. And I think that goes to show that she must be doing an amazing job. And I was certainly glad to work with her. And she's just, you know, a fun presence on set. Makes everyone smile and feel comfortable and respected, and I'd be happy to work with her again.
You went right from this movie into Justice League?
That's right. I had about a month or so in between, and then I had to go back to the UK.
Okay. What can you tell us about it? We know everybody's in it, so that's a good, like, everybody in the entire DC universe is in it, so we know that. Can you tell us anything?
I can't tell you anything else that you wouldn't be able to read for yourself on the internet. But my experience on it was that, you know, anytime I've had the pleasure of working on a Zack Snyder film, it's like, it's just fun. You know, the energy is positive. He's a huge fan of the material himself. So it just reflects in every department. You know, it all comes from the top, and his excitement and his positivity and his encouragement is just amazing. So, I mean, Justice League is right up there with one of the most fun I'd had on a film, just because of Zach and his team of people that, I don't know, they just bring this element of fun, and you almost forget that it's work because everybody's smiling, everybody's happy, everybody's getting along, and enthusiastic about what we're all doing. So all the hard work and the hours in the gym, not only are they more worth it, but it doesn't feel like hard work anymore because it feels like I'm a part of a bigger picture and it feels like I'm appreciated.
And you said this is the first time you had a stunt woman.
Yeah, that was so weird. And, you know, Jim Rowe, who's the line producer, I'd worked with him on Sucker Punch and other films, you know, Man of Steel, of course, also. And so he always saw me as a stunt woman. And he's like, Samantha Jo has a stunt woman shaking his head. And that, I think that was the first time I realized, I'm like, yeah, this is weird.
Did you get to do anything at all stunt-wise, or was it straight up acting?
Oh, yeah. I did end up doing all my own stunts for that. But, of course, I'm happy to have a stunt double. That's, like, so flippin'
cool. Okay, so
you
had a stunt double, didn't use her.
Yeah, I think it was just for...
That's awesome.
I think it was, you know, for safety reasons in case anything changes and it might be a little too risky or, I don't know, there's two units also. Maybe she could be doing something on second unit if I'm on first. I don't know. There's always a lot of different reasons that one may or may not have a stunt double. But I think it's pretty cool to have one. That's a milestone for me.
There's so many. Yeah, it definitely is. So many headlines being made about this movie before it even comes out. Obviously with Ben Affleck and Batman, is there going to be a Batman movie coming up? Is it going into another Justice? I mean, there's all this stuff that's swirling around. How would you describe like his, I don't even know if you got to work with him at all, but like, or did you ever get to meet him or like see him at the donut table or anything or craft services? Ben Affleck, yeah. Is he like hanging out in his cowl or something like that? Like I was just trying to get a sense of his mood like on set.
It's funny you say that. I didn't have a whole lot of interaction with him, but he looked really like temperature hot in his bat suit.
Not hot at like what's going on, but just like physically hot. Okay.
It looked like it was generating a lot of body heat that was difficult for him. So I think everybody noticed. That would probably be the first thing anybody could notice. But no, he was just very, I think, respectful and polite. And he made sure, and he's always, you know, he's an A-list star. He must have a lot of pressure to, you know, people always looking, trying to have conversations with him. I totally get that. But he didn't carry himself in that way. It seemed like he came into the makeup trailer and introduced himself to everyone. And yeah, like I said, I didn't have a whole lot of interaction. But no, he seemed like a nice enough person. But I did not feel envious of his wardrobe. That looked like it took a toll on
him. But he wasn't like running around throwing donuts and saying, I'm never going to come back as Batman or anything.
Oh, no. Definitely
fair enough.
Not. Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. It's just all the craziness. It's just like until these movies come out, you just wish people would calm down. So, look, you've worked on both Marvel and DC projects. Is there a project that you haven't worked on yet that's, you know, you've done Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you've done the movies, the DC movies. Is there a project that you haven't worked on yet in sort of the comic book genre that you would love, like, oh, I want to be on this show or, you know, I've saw this episode and I really want to dig on this?
Well, I think a lot of the comic book television shows, like you said, well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, I got to be a part of it as a stunt double, but I got to see how much fun those actors had. So really any of the, whether it's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Arrow, any of the comic book television shows, I think would be such an amazing experience to be a part of it, because it does move at a faster pace and you get to do so many more fights and so much more is revealed in a shorter amount of time. Like an hour episode just packs so much more information and you're only on it for, what's the average shoot, like 8 days or something. So I love the pace that it moves and the amount of work that you're able to do in that period of time. So I think Arrow or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. From an acting perspective would be just a blast.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters on Arrow that you would fit right in with.
Yeah, or the League.
The Legends of Tomorrow?
Legends of Tomorrow, that's right.
Well, you never know. We might see you in the Arrowverse, though, at some point. So how about where can we find you online? Website, social media? How can we find out more about these things and more of what you got coming up in the future?
Well, my Twitter handle is @SamWJo, and my Instagram is SamanthaWJo. But I'm really bad at Instagram, so I'll admit that firsthand. I have some work to do with keeping my Instagram updated. But that is where you will find me.
Well, we will check that out and we're going to follow you all over the place. And man, I'm telling you what, Samantha, huge year for you. This is going to be fun. Congratulations on everything that you're involved
with. Thank you so much.
Looking forward to these projects. Can't wait to see you on the big screen. Continued success. Thanks so much for joining me on Comic Book Central today.
Thank you for having me.
we are mere months away from Wonder Woman on the big screen. June 2nd, man, cannot wait for that film. That's when it premieres, June 2nd. Justice League, not long after. November 17th at the end of this year, back-to-back films, man. I'm telling you, these films, they're of course going to be epic. Wonder Woman is definitely going to be epic. And Justice League got everybody in it. So, and we are all going to look out for Samantha Jo as Yubia in those blockbusters. So got that to look forward to. Links to Samantha's social media pages can be found in the show notes for this episode at the Comic Book Central website, comicbookcentral.net. My thanks to Samantha for dropping by today to talk about her action-packed performances. Man, that was fun. All right, time to give away some flashy goodness, folks. I've got season one of The Flash on Blu-ray. It's the box set right here. I got it in my hot little hand, courtesy of those super speedsters over at Warner Brothers. That set will be headed out of the lair at lightning speed on its way to Rick Myers. Congratulations, Rick. Thank you so much for sharing the lair through the month of February. Man, thanks to all of you for sharing the lair through the month of February. Really appreciate that. Rick, make sure you send your mailing address to me, joe@comicbookcentral.net. That Flash Season 1 will be headed your way. Again, my thanks to all of you out there who shared the lair on social media last month. Man, I'm telling you what, you helped get the word out about the show to so many folks, so many new listeners. I truly appreciate you doing that. More Blu-ray giveaways are on the way in the weeks and months ahead. One sooner than you might think. So stay tuned to Comic Book Central. I'm telling you, they're coming. Keep sharing the lair each and every week, especially through March. Use those hashtags. Hashtag tripod, T-R-Y-P-O-D. Hashtag share the lair, S-H-A-R-E-T-H-E-L-A-I-R. Let's see if we can grow Comic Book Central Nation even more. Now, speaking of new listeners, I heard from another one yet this week. My virtual mailman, Willie Lumpkin, he delivered the email from Emmanuel Williams, who writes, "Hello, I just wanted to say that I finished listening to the latest podcast. I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait for more to come out. Also, keep up the good work for all the comic book fans. Thanks, and I'm glad I found you." Glad to be found, Emmanuel. Glad you found us. Thanks for hanging out in the lair with us. Hope you'll be hanging out with us each and every week. More episodes coming your way. And if you just found the show, then there's so much for you to catch up on, too. Past episodes, they're in the archive at the website, comicbookcentral.net. There is an episode guide in the About section of the Facebook page. Of course, all the episodes are in iTunes. You can subscribe to the show if you're there. Always appreciate it if you leave a review. Blueberry, Stitcher, Google Play, The Lair's Everywhere, all those back episodes are there. So thank you for checking out the show, and be sure to let me know what you think of those classic conversations when you check them out. Hey, if you want to drop me a line just like Emmanuel did, let me know what's on your mind. Tell me what you thought of Flash Month on the show, going behind the scenes of some of those Flash episodes. Tell me what you thought of Mark Hamill singing the Life Day song during his interview. Whatever you enjoyed, tell me all about it. joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click the Signal Me tab on the website, or you can record a voicemail at the website and send it along. Man, I want to hear from you. Let me know what's on your mind. All right, that's all the time we have for today, folks. I'm going to take a week off, but between Mark Hamill, Jesse Warren, Samantha Jo, three episodes in just over a week, so you got a lot of episodes of Comic Book Central out there, a lot of comic book themed content. If you missed any episodes of the show, this is a great time to catch up on those with the off week. I will be back with a brand new episode March 18th. I hope you will be back here as well. Until then, watch out for those roundhouse kicks from those Hydra agents. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Imported License. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
In the eyes of a ranger, the unsuspecting stranger had better know the truth of wrong from right. 'Cause the eyes of the ranger are upon you. Any wrong you do, he's gonna see. When you're in Texas, look behind you. 'Cause that's where the ranger's gonna be.